Chris Bullock, you're going to play Summertime when it's still kind of chilly outside.
It's going to be a beautiful day out.
It is. It is. The sun is out. The sun is shining. And we're having a great time broadcasting Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. We're live at McFadden's Power and Light District, right across the street from Sprint Center, ahead of the Big 12 Championship. Tip off at 5 o'clock. We'll have complete coverage right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, including the game, the pregame show, and Josh Briscoe, I think, is going to get rolling at 2 o'clock. So there's a big, big lead-in to the game today. Our coverage this week of the Big 12 tournament has been brought to you in part by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. We make your junk disappear. Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or visit 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Come down to McFadden's. I was just looking over the party brunch menu, which runs until 1 o'clock, so plenty of time to get down here. In fact, there's a lot of runners coming in right now from the St. Patrick's run. So there are runners coming in here looking to load up on the carbs and beverages and other things that are going on. But how about the try this on, Chris. I know you said you're not a big breakfast person, but the Fruity Pebble French Toast. Two slices of sourdough bread dipped in a cinnamon batter and dusted with Fruity Pebbles cereal served with syrup on the side. How about that?
Let me clarify this by saying I like breakfast food quite a bit.
Okay.
But I'm not usually a guy that gets up and is like, man, I need food. That's just not me.
Right.
But I do like, a good omelet, biscuits and gravy, all the good breakfast staples. I'm not a huge fan of like sugary items in the morning, so I'm not like a big French toast guy. I like waffles and pancakes, but it just makes me, if I eat a lot of them in the morning or like a donut, it just weighs me down for the rest, for the rest of the morning.
Right. No, I don't do a big breakfast a lot. Usually I'm just a basic Cheerios, Rice Krispies, Corn Flakes guy. I don't do the sugary stuff, but there's a place in town I like to go for breakfast maybe once every other month, and I won't say the name on the show since they don't sponsor us. But it's a nice little place in Brookside or just south of the plaza, and everybody who goes there knows exactly what I'm talking about. So come down to McFadden's and see us. Have a great breakfast down here. It's, again, the brunch is going until 1 o'clock. It's going to be a good time. Say hi to Shane Summers. He's busy staring at his phone, doing other stuff, making sure that we stay on the air. But good stuff down here at McFadden's. So we have David Leske coming up at 10:30. Covers the Royals for Baseball Prospectus. He was out at spring training about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. We'll talk about Martin Maldonado. At 11:30, Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, will join us. He's here at the Big 12 tournament. I've seen him inside Sprint Center a couple of times, hobnobbing with all the big names. And so I just try to wave from afar, like, hey, Dennis, I'm here, but I'm not a big deal. So he's going to join us. And he just wrote a big article on the University of Kansas and the investigations going on with both the basketball and the football programs, which would be interesting stuff to talk about. But we're going to wrap up some of the things with what Aaron Torres had to talk about, our guest in the last hour from The Athletic, who's fantastic, by the way. We're gonna bookmark him and make him a regular, Chris, if that's okay, because he was
phenomenal. I really enjoyed his points, not only his analysis, but just the energy he brought,
right.
So early on the West Coast too. I mean,
he was
calling him at 7:30 in the morning on the West Coast. he was up and at him, and he was ready to go.
Well, here's I failed to do this. I used to do this. I had a habit of checking people's Twitter feeds before they came on the air to find something funny or interesting. And Aaron Torres last night tweeted this. He was talking about Bill Walton in that segment. So he tweeted this last night. Bill Walton just said, quote, "I stopped by the Statue of Liberty today thinking about freedom and the ability to go for it all," end quote. Bill Walton is in Las Vegas. Bill Walton stood outside the Statue of Liberty at the New York casino.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I saw that as well.
It wouldn't surprise me if Bill Walton actually thought it was the real Statue of Liberty, like maybe Las Vegas bought the statue and had it moved to Vegas. That would not surprise me at all.
I know a lot of people, whenever Bill is called a KU game, people get frustrated just because, of course, like he's not always engaged with the game per se, like a classic broadcaster, color commentator. But if for Pac-12, he's perfect because the games aren't very interesting anyways. So it gives like people a reason to watch just for his own commentary and just the crazy stuff he's going to do while he's on the air.
Yeah. And it, look, I've gone back and forth on Bill Walton a couple of times. I mean, I thought it was funny a couple of years ago. I think it was at the Maui Classic where he was, let's just say his performance was enhanced. We all know what we're talking about here, right? And he was talking about bicycling and other things that had nothing to do with the game. And I thought it was funny. And then after a while, I got tired of it. I'm like, you know, this guy's a clown show. But now I've kind of come back to the other side. I'm like, look, he might be clownish in his performance, but he is who he is. He's not going to go on and try to be some polished $3,000 suit guy who just came out of the broadcast academy. He's not going to do that.
No,
he doesn't care, and he doesn't have to.
He's going to be, you know, wear that tie dye and, you know, just be himself.
Yep.
Like loving the West Coast, and I respect him for it.
Yeah, and as Aaron Torres said, you know, when he talks to other people around the Pac-12, he's at practices at 8 o'clock in the morning, at the run-throughs, at the practices, talking to coaches. He's doing the homework. It's not like he just rolls out of the rack after, you know, imbibing in whatever he imbibes in. And again, we all know what we're talking about. But he puts in the work.
No, Brad.
And if a guy is genuine and he enjoys what he does and he's informative, then that's fine. Take him for what he is.
I agree completely. And, yeah, Brad, please go into more depth about what you were talking about there a few minutes ago about Bill Walton. What was he doing there on his free time?
He was talking about riding his bike in Hawaii.
And that other thing.
No, that's okay. Everybody knows what we're talking about. But, you know, Dick Vitale used to get a lot of criticism. He's over the top. He's hyper dandy, baby, and he's over the top. And, you know, he's his own show, and he's doing it all for himself. I've interviewed Dick Vitale probably three or four times. That's who he is. He is enthusiastic about college basketball. He loves college basketball. He loves the coaches. He loves the kids. And he knows tons of high school coaches as well. When these guys, you know, Zion Williamson was a known commodity when he was in high school, but when other people step up and excel in college basketball, Dick Vitale can tell you exactly where that kid played high school basketball. He can tell you who their coach is because he knows them. Dick Vitale loves the game. And for folks that think he's a little bit, you know, of a show in and of himself, that's the way he is. He loves the game, and I think he's great for the game.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, yeah, some people are, you know, a little over, you know, Dick Vitale and all of his, you know, animated, you know, commentary throughout games. But, you know, he's one of those staples in college basketball. You know, he's a legend in the sphere of college basketball and broadcasting it. And, you know, Bill Walton's molding himself into that as well. You know, before he was doing NBA in the early 2000s, and he you know, got a start there. And then now going into Pac-12, you know, basketball, it's really, I think it's great for the game. And then hearing Gus Johnson in the Big East tournament last night calling an overtime game, I believe it was between Seton Hall, and I do not know who the opponent was, but those are the voices that you hear during, you know, March, and you're like, oh man, that's, you know, Gus Johnson and Bill Raftery and, you know, Dick Vitale. Those are the guys you think of.
Yeah, Bill Raftery is the best. I could listen to Bill Raftery on a loop 24/7. Just everything, all the sayings that he has. It's just, you know, onions, throw it in, Jerome, and everything that he's got. And, you know, KU comes out, man, all the little things that he does. But he's another guy that really loves college basketball and is dedicated to his craft. And, Chris, I'm going to tell you, while I'm down here at McFadden's, I'm just going to randomly point out things that I see. There are runners coming in from the St. Patrick's Run here in downtown Kansas City, and a guy just walked by with socks up to his knees with big University of Oklahoma logos on them, and I kind of feel bad because they were done on Thursday.
Boomer Sooner.
It was not Gary Lezak, by the way. It was not Gary Lezak.
Not Gary Lezak? You sure about that?
And it was not Todd Lebo. It was not Todd Lebo.
Are you kidding me? Lebo wasn't, you know, doing a little, like, what was it, a 12K maybe?
I think they have a 5K, a 10K, and probably one of the, like, the family stroll and walk and all that kind of stuff.
You're telling me Lebo wasn't out there, you know, running? Like that's so surprising. Yeah, that is very surprising.
No, he was not. There was another guy who walked by, and I thought his legs were tattooed all the way down, but I think they were just, what do you call them? Help me out. What do the kids call them? Leggings? Is that what you call them? Stretch pants? I don't.
Like whatever. Tights?
Kind of, yeah, like that. So it looked like he had tattoos all the way down his legs, which that would be painful. But sometimes there's just things that I see that I have to point out when I'm down here at McFadden's Power and Light, getting ready for a Big 12 championship basketball, the party brunch going on until 1 o'clock. Chris, I thought another good point that Aaron Torres made there in the last segment. By the way, if you missed Aaron Torres, check out the podcast, which you can get at 810WHB.com.
It's already up.
It's already up. Fantastic. And Aaron was great. One of the other things I liked was he's in my camp. Why is Texas being considered for the NCAA tournament?
Yeah.
I've had people make the argument to me, oh, they beat North Carolina. They did this. They beat Kansas. I know.
It's all about the quadrant one wins. I think people really rely heavily on that. It's not how the team has been playing for the conference play in the past three or four weeks. And especially with the new going away from the RPI and going to the net, like the new analytics, and you're not really trusting, as Aaron said, the eye test anymore. It's really frustrating because I have never seen in all my time watching and following college basketball a 16-15, now 16-16 team even being considered for not only the NCAA tournament, but even the NIT. It's just incredible.
Unless it's all about eyeballs, which is plausible, but I agree with Aaron's point. I would much rather see, North Carolina Greensboro or Loyola Chicago or Lipscomb or who are, I'm just picking random names out of a hat here. I'd much rather see an underdog team with more wins, maybe not the net wins or the quadrant one wins. I would much rather see that story in the NCAA tournament than, here's Texas. They were mediocre this year. We gave them a pity invite. And they're going to be either one and done or they don't make it out of the first weekend. I would much rather see the smaller schools get rewarded. And look, I get some of the argument about, well, they play in a tougher conference. Yeah, there are tougher conferences, the SEC, the Big 12, the ACC, whatever. But there's also something to be said for just going out and winning some damn games, for crying out loud, right? I mean, at some point, you have to win some games.
Agreed completely. And I think, with Texas, just the inconsistency they've shown this season does not, warrant an NCAA tournament bid, in my opinion. And they're not, they have talent at, spots with Jackson Hayes, like Osikowski's good, Kerwin Roach, but collectively as a unit, they don't play well together a lot of the time. And you will see when you see a lot of these mid-major teams that are, junior, senior laden teams, they can still score, they can still put points up, and they play as a unit and collectively in the games are just a lot better because you're seeing cohesive offensive play and, communication on the defensive end. You're seeing a more well-rounded game as a team, not maybe individually, but for people watching the tournament, at least as a basketball junkie, I enjoy a team that is well-rounded, runs their offense, can, shoot from the outside and, plays inside out and communicates on the defensive end and will, be at least show some consistency. Texas has not shown an ounce of consistency this whole season.
No, I 100% agree. By the way, we're broadcasting from McFadden's Power and Light downtown Kansas City ahead of the Big 12 Championship, Kansas and Iowa State. At 5 o'clock, we got some Iowa State fans at a table right next to us who are just participating in the St. Patrick's run. And, no judgments here, Chris. It's 10:15 in the morning, but a couple of pops being thrown down. And I'm at that age where Shane Summers and I were talking about it before the show because people were here before 9 o'clock ready to have a good time. And I think I'm at that age where, let's get to 11 o'clock or noon first. and then we'll talk about it.
It just depends. I'm all about waking up, if you have to go to like an 11 a.m. football game, a little Bailey's.
Well, that's different, yeah.
Throw some Bailey's in the coffee and just, kind of get it going. And,
that's
good stuff.
Be creative. Be creative, I guess. Let me throw this out. So Shane Summers sent me the CBSSports.com bracketology, which, Chris, you and I talked about it last week. We're kind of done with Lenardi for now because he's always 2 days late, and he's got teams in that we that I don't think should be there. So I have kind of moved to CBSSports.com. So I'm looking at the bracket here from Jerry Palm. And the Midwest, for the basketball fans here in Kansas City, I don't know if you're going to be happy with this. And, Chris, I'll give you a minute if you want to get it up on CBSSports.com on your computer there for bracketology. I'll give you a second, and you can weigh in on this. But the teams that are lined up for the Midwest that would end up here in Kansas City are, let's see, the one seed would be Kentucky. And I'm going to ask Shane, do you know what 16 seed that is? I don't know the initial... Prairie View A&M. Okay, there you go. Thank you. Yes. And by the way, that's the alma mater for Otis Taylor, Chiefs Ring of Honor, and Emmanuel Cleaver, the former mayor of Kansas City, Prairie View A&M. So Kentucky, Prairie View A&M, Minnesota, Syracuse, that would be the five, let's see, the eight versus nine, Virginia Tech and Murray State in the five versus 12, Wisconsin versus Davidson in the 4 versus 13. Marquette versus Ohio State in the 6 versus 11. Houston versus Northern Kentucky in the 3 versus 14. Auburn at 7 against the 10-seed Oklahoma Sooners. I'm surprised a little bit. And 2-seeded North Carolina taking on 15-seed Colgate. So that is the Midwest region as projected by Jerry Palm. Chris, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it yet, but that would be a little bit deflating to see that. That would be a little bit deflating if those were the only options available to come to Kansas City. I mean, I'm going to college basketball games anyway. I'm going. So, but if you're trying to drum up interest in the Midwest, those teams really don't light my fire that much.
I mean, you know, Kentucky, Big Blue Nation's right. Always going to show out. North Carolina travels,
right?
You know, pretty well. But other than that, there's not really, I mean, maybe Syracuse, but they're not, I don't see them making that much noise in the tournament this year, but maybe Oklahoma, but also another team that I don't have much confidence in, and the fans may not either play, you know, going up against an Auburn as it's predicted right here on CBS Sports. But I mean, yeah, it's kind of disappointing. The only Big 12 team represented possibly, it might probably not actually, because Oklahoma, I don't see them getting even past the first round.
Yeah, I don't see it either. I know Bill Self had high praise for him after the Sooners blew the barn doors off Kansas a week or so ago. But, yeah, that Midwest region, if it shapes out the way Jerry Palm has it, not all that exciting. By the way, if you want to know where KU is slotted on CBSSports.com, Jerry Palm has KU as a 4-seed in the South region, taking on number 13-seeded Northeastern State. Iowa State also in the South region, as a 6-seed taking on Temple. And let me flip over to the other side of the bracket just to let you know where the other Big 12 schools are. Texas Tech out west is a 4-seed against Old Dominion.
Kansas State's on the east side. They're a 4-seed playing Liberty. They're in Duke's bracket.
And Baylor is a 10-seed in that same region, taking on Mississippi State. That could be, I'll tell you what, Baylor-Mississippi State could be a really fun game.
Yeah, I agree. I think Mississippi State, if I'm not mistaken, Ben Howland is their coach, I believe, former UCLA coach. And I've watched them a few times this year, and they've got explosive players, and they're pretty fun to watch. I mean, this SEC season actually has been, for a conference that, you know, is pretty top-heavy usually, it's been pretty balanced this year, and I've really enjoyed watching a lot of the games. There's been, there's great coaches in the league right now, and, other than some, controversy with, LSU and, Will Wade and everything, it's been a very fun conference to watch this year.
Yeah, just a minor controversy, suspending the coach and the wiretaps with the coach talking about bribes. By the way, did you see Will Wade's lawyer? They're now asking a university to bring him back.
Yeah, he wants to be reinstated.
Are you kidding me? They asked him to come into the office and tell them exactly what happened and what's going on, and he refused to answer. And now he said, now his lawyers are saying, well, we'd like to see him come back to finish the season. Then answer the questions. It's your boss. If your boss, whatever job I've ever had, when I was in television, I got along with all my bosses, but there were times where you get in trouble, right? We all get in trouble for, whatever, you gave a report the wrong way, or whatever it is, and you have to go to the boss's office, and they ask you, what happened? You tell them what happened. It's your boss. It's your, the people who sign your checks are asking you to answer questions, and you decline. Well, I got to talk to my lawyer first. My lawyer. No. You answer your boss's questions.
I mean,
there was nothing by asking him if he did this. What possible reason is he afraid of self-incrimination in front of his boss?
He's going to plead the fifth. I mean, he knows he's done. I think he knows it. His lawyer probably told him, don't talk to anybody from LSU.
Don't ask to come back to your job then. Don't ask to come back to your job.
Exactly.
All right. We are coming up on a break here. I got all wound up in that segment. Man alive, I got to settle down. Maybe have one of those breakfast items here at McFadden's. That's where we're broadcasting from. They got the party brunch going on until 1 o'clock. One of the items on there that's been talked about all week long is the breakfast nachos. Triangle, fried hash browns topped with shredded cheddar, mozzarella, and pepper jack, scrambled eggs, and chopped bacon and baked. So come on down here to McFadden's Power and Light District right across from Sprint Center, right next to the Miller Lite Fan Fest presented by Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, David Leske from Baseball Perspectives will join us. We'll talk a little Royals baseball, recent acquisition of Martin Maldonado, gold glove catcher, to get the Royals by for the 2019 season. My name is Brad Porter. You're listening to special coverage of the Big 12 tournament here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Got about 4.5 in this break.
I was trying to sneeze right before we came back from break. That was not good. I had to hold it back. I got to ask Chris Bullock, who is this that you're playing here?
It's a band named Foster the People.
Oh my gosh, popular,
I think.
Haven't heard about them since all the kids with the pumped up kicks?
Yep, the song is Pumped Up Kicks. That was their kind of that was their breakout song.
I like the one that you just played though. That was good.
It's called Houdini.
Houdini. I'll have to look that up on the way home. You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest, cranking out 50,000 watts. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bullock is running the show back at the studio. Shane Summers is down here with me at McFadden's, the Power and Light District, making sure we stay on the air. McFadden's having the party brunch going until 1 o'clock. I'll continue to read off items because they're just awesome. And maybe David Leske, our next guest, will want to come down here before 1 o'clock. But how about the... let's see, the grits with spicy shrimp and andouille, buttery grits with diced red and yellow bell peppers topped with black and shrimp and andouille sausage. David Leske, I tell you what, anything with red and yellow bell peppers, I'm kind of checking out.
Oh, yeah, I'm eating that all day long. You give me some peppers, I'm happy.
As long as it, yeah. And some of the items on the menu, I got to remember, it's okay to eat because it's Saturday and not Friday. And for us Catholics out here, I had to remind myself yesterday because we were the family was going out to eat and we were trying to decide where to eat. And I said, well, you know what? It's Friday. It better be pizza. We better go to Minsky's for some cheese pizza. And I think somebody on Twitter was like, why can't you eat meat on Friday? I'm like, look, you don't have to be Catholic to know about it. It's just kind of our thing.
I'm not Catholic. I know about it.
Well, we're down here getting ready for the Big 12 tournament, KU and Iowa State. But, David, the Royals are going to start here, what, in a week and a half?
12 days. 12 more days.
12
for real
days.
Baseball.
Oh, my gosh. It's just, I know it sneaks up on us. It seems like it sneaks up on us every year. But this year, in particular, you were just down at spring training, what, a week or two ago?
And, yeah, I got back about a week and a half ago or so.
Yeah, you came back in time for one last round of snow and ice.
Pretty much, yeah. It was, well, you know, we got back in town. It snowed, the kind of snow was while we were down there. And then we got back in town, and it was 10 degrees, and that was fun. So, yeah, but it's better today. It's much better today.
Yeah, absolutely. David Leske writes about the Royals for Baseball Prospectus and was in spring training. So let's talk about I don't know if you want to call it a big signing, but I think it's important. Martin Maldonado, with Salvador Perez going down, the Royals were in need of a catcher, and in my opinion, there was no real serious thought about having Cam Gallagher and Valoria on the roster to start the season. That just, to me, it was not a good idea. So the logical choice was Maldonado, and then, you know, he fired his agent, Scott Boras, he hired a new agent, and now those two agents are fighting about who actually signed him and who gets the money, but that's not important. The important thing is the Royals got a Gold Glove catcher who's rated pretty high in terms of pitch framing, who can work with the young players on the staff. I think this is a home run signing for the Royals and for Maldonado. It's good for both.
Oh, absolutely. You know, they talked about Gallagher and Valoria, and you think, well, why would they do that? Well, I mean, I don't think they were ever seriously considering it, but if they were going, well, we got to get a veteran catcher, what happens to Maldonado's price? It goes up. So, of course, they had to make it sound like they didn't need him. And, you know, let's be real. If they didn't sign anybody and they did go with Gallagher and Valoria, it wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world. I mean, it's not like this team was going to win 94 games before, and then with that they're going to drop to 71. No, they were probably going to win 71 or 72. Maybe they dropped to 68 or 69 or something like that. So it wouldn't have been the end of the world. But from Valoria's perspective, he needs some time to cook still in the minors. I mean, he's got some work to do, and the Royals really like him a lot, and you can see why. He has a decent approach to the plate. He calls a really good game. He's got a good arm. I mean, there's a lot to like about Valoria, but he's 20 years old.
Right.
He's got however many at-bats he had in September last year, that's how many at-bats he has above A ball. So getting Maldonado is big. And like you said, he's a phenomenal pitch framer. I haven't talked to anybody with the Angels or Houston or Milwaukee where he's been. He has a pretty high number of pass balls and wild pitches. So that makes me wonder, is there an issue there that we need to keep an eye on? Maybe. It could just be that he's so good, they trust him so much, that they throw a lot of pitches in the dirt. And, you know, the percentage of wild pitches to pitches thrown is the same as everybody else. He just gets more pitches in the dirt. So we'll see about that. But I believe his pitch framing will be just outstanding for guys like Jake Junis, Brad Keller, Jorge Lopez, I think will benefit quite a bit from him. He pitched well considering the circumstances yesterday because he didn't have great command. With the wind was crazy, so that hurt his curveball a little bit. And so, you know, he's probably locked down a spot in the rotation. So I think Maldonado will be really good for these guys. And, you know, if he stays with the team all season long, he can help develop pitchers all season long. Or he got back the Angels a decent prospect in some international spot money last year. I mean, that's a nice return. And so if the Royals say, all right, we've got this guy and somebody wants him on July 28th, we're ready to bring up Valoria, who has 312 at-bats in AAA or wherever he is, and he's ready to catch every day for a couple months, and we'll see where that plays out. And, you know, I think this is a win-win for all sides, like you said. It was a no-brainer, too. You know, from the second Perez went down, my thought was, okay, who are the free agent catchers other than Maldonado? Oh, it's only Maldonado? Okay, he's a Royal.
Yes.
I mean, that was pretty much it. So it's a great deal for everybody, and I'm excited to see him get in there. I'm assuming he'll get in sometime during the next week or so just because he hasn't played yet, but I think he's getting up to speed, and we'll see how he does.
We're speaking with David Leske, writes about the Royals for Baseball Prospectus. One more thing on Maldonado. I mentioned the agents. He fired Scott Boras, hired a new agent, and now the agents are arguing over who gets the money. I guess Boras has a problem with it because it was the same deal. But I got to ask you this. If Scott Boras has kind of lost a step here, because I think he totally mishandled Mike Moustakas the last couple of years, could have taken the franchise offer, whatever the term is, for $17 million last year, didn't, got a below-average contract from the Royals. Now he's got a below-average contract from the Brewers. With Maldonado, apparently he had a two-year, $12 million offer from the Astros, and Boras turned that down and ends up on a $2 to $3 million one-year deal with the Royals. Has Scott Boras lost a step here? Is he not reading the landscape correctly for his clients?
Well, you know, I don't know if he's reading the landscape poorly or not. I mean, I look back to last year. I don't fault him for that because I don't know that anybody necessarily saw that coming. But once it happened last year, I think you had to be prepared for it this year. And
right.
And I think that he may see the – I don't know what his thought process is, obviously. I think the issue is that he is overconfident in himself to get a team to budge on a certain player. And I think he can do that on a guy like Bryce Harper. I think he can do that on, you know, the top-end free agents. Sure, you meet with the owners, you convince them that he's a good investment, and Scott Boras can work his magic and get $330 million for his clients. But – it's the guys like Moustakas, like Maldonado, Prost, Gonzalez is still out there right now. You know, these guys, I think he's going in there going, oh, I can get them, you know, 2 years and $30 million for Moustakas or 2 and 22 for Carlos Gonzalez or whatever the number is. It doesn't matter. And guys just aren't getting that. That level of players are not getting that. And so when you get an offer that is near that, 2 years, $12 million for Maldonado, whatever it actually was, I think you got to jump on it. I think you have to trust yourself a little bit less
right.
in that realm of player. You know, like I said, the three key guys, yeah, I think he's fine. Obviously, he got Bryce Harper his money, but it's the second tier, the middle tier guys that I think he's misreading it or misreading his own ability. And it's costing his clients, and I think we're starting to see it costing him clients as well because they're leaving. And,
right.
You know, it's part of the game. The way the front offices view players shifts, and I mean, I think that there's some collusion going on personally. But you know, his job is to navigate that. His job is to navigate that, and also push the player association to fight back against that as well. But you know, I don't think his job is not to fight back against that at the expense of his clients, and I don't think he's doing his job very well for them.
We're speaking with David Leske, writes about the Royals for Baseball Prospectus. We're broadcasting Sports Saturday live from McFadden's at the Power and Light District, right across from Sprint Center and next to the Miller Lite Fan Fest, presented by Sports Radio 810 WHB, getting ready for KU and Iowa State tonight at 5 o'clock. So, David, I wasn't going to go there right away, but I'll go there now. You mentioned the collusion word, which I think a lot of people believe ownership is involved in right now, and if it turns out that's the case, the owners are going to be paying up a ton of money because I remember what happened the last time. The players were able to prove this, and it kind of goes to some pointed comments. I'm just going to refer to Whit Merrifield now as unplugged. He doesn't care anymore.
He's ready to talk.
He's got the contract. He's got the money. He's got the chip on his shoulder, and he's coming at you. And by the way, I love it. Everything that he's saying, mm-hmm. I love what he says because these are things that should have been said 3, 4, maybe 5 years ago. So Whit Merrifield, he was talking about the expanding the rosters to 26 players here. Is it next year or 2021? Next year. So expanding the rosters to 26 players, and he goes, yeah, if we'd have done that 2 years ago, I'd have a World Series ring, or it cost me 2 years of my pro career, something mm-hmm. like that, which I love. I love a guy who's brutally honest. But he's also talking about, as we talked about with Moustakas, and guys not getting paid. And Alex Gordon went off on this a couple of weeks ago as well. I know the players and the owners are talking right now about small things like the expanded rosters or speeding up the game or pitchers have to pitch to at least 3 batters, which I think is ridiculous. They're talking about those things now. But I still think this is a huge – I'm borrowing a line from Seinfeld here. There's a huge matzo ball out there, and it's money. And the players don't feel they're getting their fair cut. And this is something that if it's not settled, they are going to absolutely 100% walk out.
Yes, for sure. And the good news from a fan perspective, because nobody wants to walk out. The players might.
No, nobody does. The players don't want it. The owners don't want it. Fans don't want it. Nope.
They don't want it. But the, you know, the players and owners might see it, either walk out, lockout, strike, whatever it is, as a necessary evil. The fans don't benefit anyway from any of that. So the good news from that perspective is there's 2 more years, really 3 more seasons before the CBA is up. And so there's a whole lot of time. And the other good news is, yes, the stuff that they're talking about right now, the 3-batter minimum, the roster expansion, the single trade deadline, all that stuff that's going into effect over the next 2 years, 2 seasons, I guess, is kind of small potatoes to the real issue, but they're talking. And that's the important thing, because as of 6 months ago, they weren't talking. Rob Manfred was talking about unilaterally making these decisions, and the players were not having, they didn't care. They were not going to have the conversation, and now they're talking. And that's the good news, because there's, you know, you're not going to get to the big issues first. And so at least they're in that conversation mode. I saw somebody on Twitter, I think it was Maury Brown, who writes for Forbes and used to be a baseball perspective as well. He said, look, I thought the strike was 100% going to happen a few months ago. Now it's like 50-50. And that's with three seasons to go, that's a good number. I'm okay with that if it continues down that path. And I do think that there's reason for optimism that it won't happen. Look, it's a $10 billion industry. At the end of 2021, when the CBA is up, it could be an $11 or $12 billion industry. It benefits nobody to strike in the short run, at the very least. In the long run, maybe there's some benefit to it, but there is every incentive in the world for these guys to come to a deal, and I think they will, actually, at this point. Now that they're talking, I think they'll come to a deal. But, I mean, it's a concern. It's something to keep an eye on, because, I mean, baseball was in big trouble 25 years ago when they struck. And I can't believe it's been 25 years. That's crazy.
I was just going to, you knocked me back with that one. Holy cow, it's been that long.
That's insane to me. I knocked myself back thinking about that. I'm going, wait, did I do that math wrong? Is it 15? No, it's 25. And 25 years of labor peace is huge. So, you know, they need to get this done. I kind of have the hunch that they will at this point, but it's a concern for sure.
25 years ago takes me back, because that 94 season, I'm not going to spend much time on this, but that 94 season was my first season covering the Royals when I was working for Don Fortune at 980 KMBZ and Greg Eklund over there. And that was my first season covering the Royals. And I was, you know, I was a punk kid. I was, I don't know, 20, 21 years old, and in the clubhouse. And I was like, this is great. I'm covering Major League Baseball. We're going to the playoffs. The Royals are awesome. Get David Cohen and all these guys. And then somewhere around July, maybe early August, one of the players pulled me aside who liked me, and he wanted to just kind of let me down easy. He goes, look, Brad, I know you're excited, but you got to dial it back a little bit, because there's not going to be a World Series this year. And I said, oh, come on. You're crazy. I mean, who cancels the World Series? He goes, I'm telling you, the owners are not going to let us play this World Series, and we're not giving in. Ain't going to happen. That was 25 years ago when I first started. So,
and that was like probably right at the tail end of the 14-game winning streak.
Yes, it was right about there. Yeah, that's probably why I was excited, and
probably,
one of the players had to pull me aside and say, yeah, dial it back, because it ain't happening. But
we're talking about the 94 season. I can still tell you what the Royals' record was. They were 64-51 when the strike hit. Why do I know that? No reason my brain should keep that information, but that's how great that season was. And then, I mean, it's, I'm with you.
Yeah. We're speaking with David Leske, who covers the Royals for Baseball Prospectus. Went to spring training here just a couple of weeks ago. So let's kind of get back on that track with the Royals. A couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, when Salvador Perez was healthy, he predicted that Brad Keller would be the opening day starter. And then he had to walk that back, because I'm sure somebody from the PR staff told him, yeah, Salvi, you can't say that until Ned says it. And then this past week, Ned Yost said, yeah, Brad Keller's going to be the opening day starter. I think it's a great story. It's a remarkable story for a guy who was a Rule 5 draft pick last year. He was a guy another organization decided, we can't afford to protect this guy. The Royals, advanced scouts or whatever scouts they use to look at other minor leaguers, identified Brad Keller, said, we want to bring him in, put him on the Major League roster. And a year later, he's the opening day starter, David. And you know J.J. Piccolo, you know Scott Sharp, Dayton Moore, Jin Wong. All these guys in the front office are fantastic. Whoever identified Brad Keller deserves, $1 million bonus, $100,000 bonus?
Easily,
take your pick. Oh, my gosh. What a find for the Royals.
The thing about Keller, he wasn't just a Rule 5 pick. He was the secondary Rule 5 pick. I mean, everybody was excited about Birch Smith. And right. If he's the guy who's going to come in with the flowing locks, throw a 98, and he could be a closer and blah, blah, blah. Now, I don't even know what team he got picked up by, because he's off the Royals.
Right.
And Brad Keller is the story. He's really impressive. And when you think back on it, you realize, okay, actually, like, really pretty young for a Rule 5 guy to stick all season long. He had double-A experience, which you don't always get that in Rule 5 guys. A lot of times they're guys who are in A-ball. He just kind of stashed in the bullpen. But he had almost, you know, double-A to me is, that's the point when you say, okay, this guy could be a big leaguer if they can get a double-A. Up until then, it's just it's all dreaming on them. But once they get to double-A, it's like, okay, they could play in the majors because they're pretty close. And so he had that experience, and he put together a really solid season. And we've talked about this a couple times. What impressed me the most about Brad Keller was he was great in the bullpen, which kind of surprised me at the start of the season. And in his transition to the rotation, he was getting it done, but it didn't look like it could stick. And then he started throwing harder. He started getting better spin on his fastball. He started getting more ground balls again. And all of a sudden, he was almost the pitcher in the rotation that he was in the bullpen, which you don't see. You usually see a decent little drop-off from bullpen to rotation. And because of the innings log, you have to save a little bit and all that. But he seemed to get more and more comfortable as the season went on. He had a really good month as a starter. He had a really good last month with the peripherals in September. He got more swinging strikes. He was walking slightly fewer batters. I mean, everything about the end of his season was positive. I think it's kind of indicative more of the Royals and a Brad Keller that he's the opening day starter, but he's earned it. He's been so good that he deserves to make that start. And you could have argued for Jake Junis, and I wouldn't have disagreed with you there either, but it's really impressive what he's done. And look, the Royals have some upside in the rotation now with him, with Junis, with Jorge Lopez, who I mentioned earlier. Bill Meyer is going to get some starts at some point. You know, they're going to win it with five guys, but I mean, it's going to be 8 to 14 players going to get starts.
Right.
So we're going to see plenty of these guys, and there's some upside there. And you know, I don't know if Keller is an ace down the road. I tend to think that if the Royals have an ace in their organization, it's one of the three college guys they picked at the top of the draft last year. But you know, maybe Keller continues to surprise people. Aces emerge. Corey Kluber is a guy. I'm not saying Keller is Kluber, but Corey Kluber is a guy who, you know, even back 2013 or so, I'm watching him going, this guy's better than his ERA. He should not be a 5.5 ERA guy. I think he's going to be good. Never expected this for Kluber. Some guys come out of nowhere. So you know, maybe Keller's that guy. Who knows? And it's exciting that the Royals have him. It's exciting that he gets to pitch on opening day, and hopefully he can build on his rookie season and just never look back.
We're speaking with David Leske, who covers the Royals for Baseball Prospectus. Final thing for you, David, on starting pitching. You got an over-under on innings for Danny Duffy this year because he's already had a setback in spring training. He's not going to start opening day. He's never thrown more than 200 innings, which I know when James Shields was on the team, Danny Duffy would say, James Shield always told me, 200. You got to get to 200, and Danny's not been able to do that. And look, I'm not expecting him to, so I will not be disappointed if he doesn't, but do you have an over-under on number of innings we'll see from Danny Duffy this season?
Oh, boy. I mean, 100? I mean, at this point, until he gets on a mound, you've got to temper your expectations. But the thing is, with the off days and the start of the season, they don't need a fifth starter until, I think, April 12th.
Right.
And because of that, it allows them a little more time with one of their starters, and Duffy's the guy they need a little more time with. So I'm not as concerned because he's throwing. And he's thrown off a mound a little bit. He just hasn't faced hitters yet. So I think there's a chance it's not that bad, but I'd put it at 100 right now, and I'd be hesitant to take the over just because of shoulder issues are scary. And he had them last year. He's got them already this year. It's tough to predict many innings from that.
I think that's a good number. I might have gone 110 or 120, but 100 sounds like a better number considering everything that's happened. Hey, David, I appreciate you joining us, and get out and enjoy the sun is out today, David. It's a weekend.
Finally.
The sun is out. There's no snow. There's no rain. So get out and enjoy the day today.
I will do that. You try to also.
I will. That's David Leske, Baseball Prospectus. Covers the Kansas City Royals. Joining us here on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB, as we broadcast live from McFadden's Power and Light District, right across from Sprint Center in downtown Kansas City, right next to the Miller Lite Fan Fest, which is brought to you by Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll take a quick timeout. We'll come back and we'll wrap up some final Royals thoughts, and then we'll get into hour number three, where at some point we'll speak with Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com, talking college basketball and football. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bullock is running the show back to the studio. Shane Summers is out here making sure everything works correctly. And we'll see you back here in just a second on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. Just a couple of minutes left in hour number two, and then we'll charge straight on ahead to hour number three. Our coverage of the Big 12 tournament this week brought to you in part by 360 Vodka, Kansas City's preferred premium vodka. While you're tuning into the Big 12, try one of 360's 12 amazing flavors. And don't forget, follow them on social media. We continue to broadcast live from McFadden's Power and Light District, downtown Kansas City, right across from Sprint Center, right next to the Miller Lite Fan Fest, presented by Sports Radio 810 WHB. Brunch here at McFadden's, the party brunch, going on until 1 o'clock. So stop by, say hello to me, Shane Summers. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll get into some more Royals baseball, some Chiefs football, and then at 11:30, Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, will join us to talk college basketball and a little bit of college football. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bullock is running the show, and you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.